Good evening. How are we doing? It's great to be here. Great to see you guys. I'm excited. Yesterday, as the campus ministry, we had a day retreat. And they're fired up. I mean, it was awesome, guys. We went to Tribble Mill Park, got there at 8 a.m., nice and bright and early for campus students. And we just spent the whole day with God. And when we got there, we sang songs. We spent hours in prayer. We heard, we heard two lessons each, so we split men and women. And it was just an awesome time. We had fellowship, and then we ended up going to Jalapenos, delicious food, by the way. We ended up having dinner together. It was just an awesome day, and we're very excited for campus classes to start on Monday. So pray for us as we go out there and tear it up for God. Go ahead and open up to Genesis chapter 37 with me. But tonight, the title of my lesson is Great Cloud of Witnesses. Hebrews 11 chapter 1 tells us, faith is being sure of what you hope for and certain of what you do not see. The Hebrew word is pist. It means conviction of the truth of anything. Conviction of the truth of anything. So you are being sure and certain, meaning you have proof and confidence in something that you cannot see. And so the question begs to ask, how can you have proof and confidence in something that is invisible, in something that you cannot see? But every human being alive on this earth has faith. I like to call it gravity. We cannot see it, but we have proof that it exists. We can observe it. We can test it. We can put it under many different situations and it comes out the same. We can see the effects of it. It's the same with wind, with love, with sound, with atoms. There are things that we do not see, but we have proof that they are there. And so we have confidence. And the way that we live our lives is different because when we're around the edge of a cliff, we don't just stand there normally like this. We kind of just, kind of look over real shaky, right? Or on tall buildings, we're scared. Many people are afraid of heights for a reason. Because we believe in gravity. Because we know that if I step off this, I'm going down. And it's going to hurt. But we can have the same with God. We can have proof that God exists. We can observe Him. We can see the effects that He has. We can go to His Word and we can test it. And we can see the results are the same over and over and over again. And the result of that, our lives will be different. They will change. We will never act the same and we will never think the same. Because we have proof and confidence that there is a God. So I want to ask you, how is your faith today? How has your faith been over the last couple weeks? Where is it at? Ask yourself. Is it strong? Is it shaken? Or is it gone? It's like, it's not there. The author of Hebrews gives us a list in chapter 11 of incredible men and women of faith. And I want to look at two of those tonight. Joseph and Moses. And as you can guess, we're going to look at Joseph because we're in Genesis chapter 37. Go ahead and we're going to start in verse 12. But right before this, Joseph is a young man. He's a 17-year-old teenager. And he has this dream that his family is going to bow down to him. And of course, as a 17-year-old, he tells his older brothers and he tells his family, "You guys are going to bow down to me." They don't like this. Chapter 37, starting in verse 12. It says, "Now his brothers had gone to graze their father's flock near Shechem. And Israel said to Joseph, 'As you know, your brothers are grazing the flocks near Shechem. Come, I am going to send you to them.' 'Very well,' he replied. So he said to him, 'Go and see if it is all well with your brothers and with the flocks, and bring word back to me.' Then he sent him off from the valley of Hebron." Skip over to verse 23. "So when Joseph came to his brothers, they stripped him of his robe, the richly ornamented robe he was wearing. And they took him and threw him into the cistern. Now the cistern was empty, there was no water in it. As they sat down to eat their meal, They looked up and saw a caravan of Ishmaelites coming from Gilead. Their camels were loaded with spices, balm, and myrrh, and they were on their way to take them down to Egypt. Judah said to his brothers, "What will we gain if we kill our brother and covered up his blood? Come, let's sell him to the Ishmaelites and not lay our hands on him. After all, he is our brother, our own flesh and blood." His brothers agreed. So when the Midianites merchants came by, his brothers pulled Joseph up out of the cistern and sold him for 20 shekels of silver to Ishmaelites, who took him to Egypt. Now here's a 17-year-old boy, sold as a slave by his brothers. How would you be feeling in this time? I know I'd be angry. I'd be furious. I'd be confused. I'd be hurt. I'd be sad. I'd be defeated. I'd be hopeless. I'm just sold as a slave for 20 pieces of silver by my own blood. How many of us have had these emotions of anger, of doubt, of fear, of sadness? I know we've all had these emotions. But Joseph had no idea what was going to happen to him. He had no idea what was going to be the result of his life. And it's the same with us. But let's see what Joseph does with these emotions. And let's see if we compare to him. So go to chapter 39. Starting in verse 1. It says, "Now Joseph had been taken down to Egypt. Potiphar, an Egyptian, who was one of Pharaoh's officials, the captain of the guard, bought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him there. The Lord was with Joseph, and he prospered. And he lived in the house of his Egyptian master. When his master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord gave him success in everything he did, Joseph found favor in his eyes, and became his attendant. Potiphar put him in charge of his household, and he entrusted to his care everything he owned. From the time he put him in charge of his household and of all that he owned, the Lord blessed the household of the Egyptian because of Joseph. The blessing of the Lord was on everything Potiphar had, both in the house and in the field. So he left in Joseph's care everything he had. With Joseph in charge, he did not concern himself with anything except the food he ate." We see what Joseph did with those emotions. He probably dealt with it, but he didn't let it defeat him. This man worked hard. He was a slave, and here's this high official says, "Everything I own, I'm giving it to you to run." Could you imagine that? Everything he had, including animals. He's like, "Man, you're even awesome with animals. Go ahead. I will not concern myself with anything that you have because you work so hard." And this is after his brothers tried to kill him. They were actually convinced not to kill him, and so they just sold him. This is after all these emotionally charged things happened to him. He doesn't quit. He works hard. He trusts God. That is an incredible faith in God. He's like, "Well, okay, this is terrible, but I know God is in control. I have proof and confidence that God cares for me. So obviously he wants me here. So what am I going to do?" He honored God. He walked with God. But it doesn't end there. Verse 6, 7. It says, "Now Joseph was well-built and handsome. And after a while, his master's wife took notice of Joseph and said, 'Come to bed with me.' But he refused. 'With me in charge,' he told her, 'my master does not concern himself with anything in his house. Everything he owns, he has entrusted to my care. No one is greater in this house than I am. My master has withheld nothing from me except you, because you are his wife. How then can I do such a wicked thing and sin against God?' And though she spoke to Joseph day after day, he refused to go to bed with her or even be with her. One day he went into the house to attend his duties, and none of the household servants was inside. She caught him by his cloak and said, "Come to bed with me." But he left his cloak in her hand and ran out of the house. When she saw that he had left his cloak in her hand and had run out of the house, she called her household servants. "Look," she said to them, "this Hebrew has been brought to us to make sport of us. He came in here to sleep with me, but I screamed. When he heard me scream for help, he left his cloak beside me and ran out of the house." Talk about faith in God. You're going to need some strong faith in God to go through this. He had proof and confidence that God was with him. And Joseph was an upright man. And here's this woman, day after day, asking him, "Sleep with me." Actually, she wasn't even asking. She said, "Sleep with me." Day after day after day. And look at what he was concerned with. Verse 9. He says, "Because you are a wife," he says, "how then could I do such a wicked thing as sin against God?" His concern was with God, not with man. I mean, he mentions Potiphar's giving me all this stuff, but he says, "How can I do this against God?" Not against Potiphar. His mind was on God. That is faith. It's an incredible thing to be concerned more about God than man. And in 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 19, write this down. It says, "For it is commendable if someone bears up under the pain of unjust suffering because they are conscious of God." That is what happened to Joseph. He was conscious of God, and he was put in prison because of it. Because he did not sleep with this woman. Joseph suffered many years in a dungeon. We're not talking about he had a nice padded mattress and cable TV and air conditioning and three meals a day. He was in a dungeon, shackled up, because he would not sleep with a woman. I want to talk about purity. How long do you have to be tempted before you give in? How long? We see Joseph, day after day after day, a woman is begging him to sleep with her, and he never gives in. In fact, she grabs him and says, "Sleep with me," and he runs. He flees. He leaves everything that he has and he just gets out of that place. How fast are you to run from temptation? Do you toe the line? You know what I'm talking about, right? Where, well, I don't feel bad. I don't feel like I'm sinning right now. And you're kind of flirting with sin. Like, how close can I get to this line before it's actually sin? And is this sin? Or, wow, that was an accident. I actually just happened to walk by those magazines that I'm trying to walk by, and I happened to glance at them. And we do this thing, right? Joseph didn't play with sin. He ran. And this doesn't just apply to purity, right? We could talk about our pride, selfishness, laziness, greed, debauchery, name it, whatever. We could toe that line. But how long do you have to be tempted before you give in? You know, it's very easy for me to justify being lazy and selfish. You know, I could say, well, I've been at work all day. I've been doing stuff time and time again. I mean, I was out all day for 12 hours. Now you want me to come home and do stuff? You want me to talk to you? What? Can I just please get 2 hours of nothing? Let me just be myself. I don't want to help you. I don't want to clean. I don't want to talk. That's so easy for me to justify that. Well, I was doing God's stuff all day. You know how many Bible studies I had? I was just drained emotionally. Can't I just get time? Now, I'm not talking about getting recharged. We need to get recharged, amen? But we know when we're being lazy, right? We don't need 2 hours of just like drooling on ourselves every day. You know, we gotta be real with ourselves. We can't give in to this stuff. We can't flirt with it. We can see Joseph, he was being a righteous man. It caused him pain. Being righteous can cause you pain. It can cause us to suffer. I know that many of us, we don't like suffering. We turn from it. But we need to be okay with suffering. We need to be okay with it. And you know, our late sister Myrna Daniels, She was an incredible example of being faithful and not wavering in her faith, and trusting God during very difficult physical things. I mean, that woman suffered, and she never wavered. And at her funeral, just the stories of how much she served and how much she gave, even up to the day of her death. I mean, just concern for other people. She did not run from suffering. She did not let it waver her, did not let it turn her faith around. Truth be told, I could not handle what Myrna Daniels went through. There's no way I could do that. And it shows me I have much to grow in. I have a lot to grow in. I cannot run from suffering, because many times when I run from suffering, that means I'm running towards sin. And I know I'm not alone in that. We go back to what we're comfortable to, right? And for all of us, we grew up sinning. And we're very comfortable with sin. So we need to be okay with suffering. Joseph did not fall and give up. We all read the story. We know it. He had faith in God. And he had faith that, one, that his dream would come true, that his family would bow to him, and that God is real, and he would have to give an account to God for his life and the way that he lived it. So why didn't he give up? Why didn't he quit? He tells us in Genesis chapter 50. Starting in verse 15 of chapter 50. He says, "When Joseph's brothers saw that their father was dead, they said, 'What if Joseph holds grudges against us and pays us back for all the wrong we did to him?' So they sent word to Joseph saying, 'Your father left these instructions before he died. This is what you are to say to Joseph. I ask you to forgive your brothers the sins and the wrongs they committed in treating you badly. Now please forgive the sins of the servants of God your father.' When their message came to Joseph, he wept. His brothers then came and threw themselves down before him. 'We are your slaves,' they said. But Joseph said to them, 'Don't be afraid. Am I in the place of God? You intended to harm me, but God intended it for the good to accomplish what is now being done, the saving of many lives. So then don't be afraid. I will provide for you and your children.' And he reassured them and spoke kindly to them." I mean, just amazing, right? "You intended this for my harm, but God intended it for my good." How many of us feel like this is not for my good? This can't be for my good. This is too difficult or too confusing or too strange, or what is going on? But when you have faith in God and who he is, it will get you through those hard times. Just like it got Joseph through those hard times. It was his faith that got him through it. Imitate the faith of Joseph and never quit. Feeling confused about what the future holds? You know, can we be there? Why did I lose my job? Why haven't I gotten a job yet? Why am I still single? Why am I still in school? Why don't I have my freedom? If you say that you love me, why is this stuff going on? Do you really know? Do you really care? Joseph felt all of these things, I'm sure, and more. Maybe not graduating, but he felt all of these things and more. And look at his example. Imitate him. This is why we have narratives in the Bible. And it's not just like this book of lists and laws. Like, okay, here's the rules. He gives us narratives so that it's something that we can aim to and be and imitate. So let's imitate Joseph. Let's imitate his faith. The next guy, Moses. So Exodus chapter 1, we're right there, right? Starting in verse 22. It says, "Then Pharaoh gave this order to all his people. Every boy that is born must be thrown into the Nile, but let every girl live. Now a man of the house of Levi married a Levite woman, and she became pregnant and gave birth to a son. When she saw that he was a fine child, she hid him for 3 months. But when she could hide him no longer, she got a papyrus basket for him and coated it with tar and pitch. Then she placed the child in it and put it among the reeds along the bank of the Nile." You know, Moses had a very faithful mom. And that faith in God was passed down to Moses. She put him in a river. And let me remind you where this river is. It's the Nile in Egypt. And if you ever watched Discovery Channel or anything like that, you know there's large crocodiles in the Nile. And she just put her child in there, and she trusted God. I mean, she hid a child for 3 months. I have a 6-week-old. And I don't know how you can hide a child. I don't even know how that's possible. But she held him, she hid him for 3 months. And then she said, all right, he's God's. And we know that God took care of him. We know that God raised him up. We're going to go to Exodus chapter 2 right here in verse 11. It says, one day, after Moses had grown up, he went out to where his own people were and watched them at their hard labor. He saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, one of his own people. Glancing this way and that, and seeing no one, he killed the Egyptian and hid him in the sand. Here's Moses, right? The next Pharaoh to be. He was a prince of Egypt. He had compassion for God's people. And this led to Moses giving up luxury and a solid standing with man in order to follow God and obey his calling. Realize all that Moses gave up on this single act right here. This compromised him, and this is what caused him to flee and to run away. But he did it because he couldn't idly stand by. He had to obey God's calling. That takes faith. His future was secure. He was a prince. He had everything. We always see the pictures of, you know, them being fanned and fed grapes, right? He could have had that, but he gave it all up. Doing it God's way will not always be easy or fun. Sometimes you'll have to make hard choices, and that will cost you financially. It will cost you socially or geographically. I hate the cold. God may call me to go way up north one day. I don't know. And it can even cause your safety or your standing in this world by obeying God. And that we have to be okay with that. So what is the final say-so in your decisions and your big decisions? Is it you, your comfort, money, or is it a better standing with God and a better resurrection? What is your final decision maker? You know, there was this brother in Gainesville, Florida. He owned this restaurant, and it was getting busier and busier, and he was getting more and more customers, and the work was becoming too much. But he decided, it was his conviction, I will never miss church, no matter what. And he would often come smelling like chicken, coming to church. He was never late. And after church, he would go back and finish the store up. It got so busy that he actually had to close the store on Sundays. He was just like, I can't do it. I can't do it. I can't have all this stuff overtake my priorities. I can't have my job overtake God's commands. He was a man that could make a lot more money. And it was very easy. It would have been very easy for him to justify it, right? Well, the more money I have, the more money I can give. God has given me this company so I can get it bigger and bigger and bigger. This is God blessing me. This is God giving to me. He could have easily justified it. But he said, you know what? I'm going to stand on God's word and his promises. He gave up money to be a great husband. He gave up money to lead his family. He gave up money to be with the body. These are men and women that we need to do what they do. We need to imitate them. We need to follow their examples. Are you giving more to your future on this earth or to your future with God? The reality is that you will serve one and hate the other. You are a slave to the one whom you obey. Luke 9, turn there. Luke chapter 9, verse 23. Luke chapter 9, verse 23 says, then he said to them all, would come after me, he must deny himself and take up his cross daily and follow me. Whoever wants to save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for me will save it. What good is it for a man to gain the whole world and yet lose or forfeit his very self? If anyone is ashamed of me and my words, the Son of Man will be ashamed of him when he comes in the glory and in the glory of the Father and of the holy angels. As disciples, we are called to deny ourselves, meaning that we no longer exist. Stephen Little died February 26, 2006. Stephen Little no longer exists. The life I live now is for Christ. Do not get caught up in this world. It is very easy, especially when our faith is weak. It is what we see. It is what is around it. It is what we hear. It is very easy to do it. Have the faith of Moses. Give it all up to follow God and answer the call that he has for you. We know Moses goes and does incredible things, right? Incredible things. Leads millions of people out. God uses him in an incredible way. But he is not alone. Hebrews chapter 11 has an incredible list. Turn to Hebrews chapter 11. Joseph and Moses were not alone in this. Starting in verse 32 of chapter 11, Hebrews chapter 11. He says, and what more shall I say after talking about all these other faithful people? I do not have time to tell you about Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah, David, Samuel, and the prophets, who through faith conquered kingdoms, administered justice, and gained what was promised, who shut the mouths of lions, quenched the fury of the flames, and escaped the edge of the sword, whose weakness was turned to strength, and who became powerful in battle and routed foreign armies. Women received back their dead, raised to life again. Others were tortured and refused to be released, so that they might gain a better resurrection. Some faced jeers and floggings, while still others were chained and put in prison. They were stoned. They were sawed in two. They were put to death by the sword. They went about in sheepskin and goatskin, destitute, persecuted, and mistreated. The world was not worthy of them. They wandered in deserts and mountains and in caves and in holes in the ground. These were all commended for their faith, yet none of them received what had been promised. God had planned something better for us, that only together with us would they be made perfect. Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles. And let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. Let us fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured such opposition from sinful men, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. These men and women did amazing things. For God and for his people, they went through very difficult situations that we read about them being sawn in two, put in prison, destitute, living in caves. They had faith in God and knew who God was and knew that he would come through on his word. God says that these men and women are a great cloud of witnesses. But what are they witnessing? Are they watching over us and witnessing how we are being faithful? You know, Malachi Groover he wants to go to med school. Like his dad, he wants to be a doctor. And when things get tough and he wants to quit, his dad is there telling him, it's worth it. It's worth it. I know that class. I remember that class. That one's tough. Get through it because it's worth it. Just like I have relationships with older men and women. And they encourage me and help me with parenting. Like, oh yeah, that's tough. I remember that. They're here to help me and encourage me with my marriage, with my discipleship, with my life. They are there to encourage me and tell me that I can do it. That God will work it out. That God is there with me and for me. The same thing with all these men and women that we read about in Hebrews chapter 11. They are witnesses to God's faithfulness. That is the great cloud of witnesses. They're saying, God is faithful. Look what we went through. He will get you through it. They are witnesses to God's faithfulness. There are three main things that these men and women witness to. Number one, God always comes through. God always comes through. Look at God's track record. Look at his resume. There are no mess-ups, no hiccups or mistakes. It's flawless and perfect. So why doubt? Why worry? Why complain? If God calls us to raise our kids in a certain way, why do we even entertain and implement what the world teaches? It doesn't make sense. Why do it? If it's why do things that are contrary to what God says? Husbands, if God says that we are the leaders of our families, why doubt it? Why not be it and do it? It is time to do it and be it. Stop doubting. It is time to stop doubting God with our actions. Titus 1:16 is very convicting. It says, they claim to know God, but by their actions they deny him. Is that you? Is that me? Yeah, I go to church, I pray, I read my Bible, I spend time with God. But my life is just denying that he exists. I worry, I doubt, I complain. I give in to fear. All that is saying, I deny God. We need to examine ourselves. You need to take a sober look at yourself and see where you really are. Let's get real. Do you have the guts to admit where you are? Do you have the guts to face it? God called Abraham a father when he had no son. He called Peter a rock when he was doubting and was all over the place like loose sand. He called Paul his servant when he was on his way to Damascus to destroy disciples. He called Gideon a mighty warrior when he was hiding and afraid. He called David king of Israel when he was out tending his father's sheep. Shall I go on? He told Joshua that he would lead God's people to the promised land when they were still in the desert for 40 years. He called Jonah his prophet when he was running from God. He called Mary a mother when she was a virgin. He called Moses his leader when he was stuttering and making excuses. What is God calling you? What is he calling you to? He always comes through. He never messes up. He never makes a mistake. God always comes through. Number two, these men and women witness to us that it is worth it. We see that these men and women went through incredible difficulties and they never quit. Paul talks about it in 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verses 16 through 18. It says, Therefore we do not lose heart, though outwardly we are wasting away, yet inwardly we are being renewed day by day. For our light and momentary troubles are achieving for us an eternal glory that far outweighs them all. So fix our eyes not on what is seen, but what is unseen. Since what is seen is temporary, but what is unseen is eternal. There is a place prepared for you and I. It is worth it. It is worth it. Study out these characters. Look what they went through. It is worth it, guys. Number three, that these men and women are witnessing to us. There is no easy way. There is no easy way. Jesus says that the gate is small and the path is narrow and only a few find it. That's not an easy gate and an easy path. We know from life in Hebrews chapter 12, verse 11, no discipline seemed pleasant at the time, but painful. Later on, however, it produces a harvest of righteousness and peace for those who have been trained by it. There is no easy way through this life. I'm 29 years old. I'm much younger than others and a little younger than some. But we all know that life is not easy. The only way to get through it is stay close to God and have faith in Him, and He will get us through it. Because we have these men and women showing us that God always comes through, that it is worth it, and that there is no easy way, throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles. What is hindering you? Is it your computer? Get rid of it. Is it that worldly relationship? Throw it away. Is it your comfort, your fear, your insecurity? Get rid of it. Throw it off. What sin has you wrapped up that just keeps getting you, keeps dogging you over and over and over? And you feel like, I will never be able to get away from this. Get open. Alan Rouse had the open invitation. He said, the elders are here to help you. No matter what you're going through, get the help that you need. Throw these things off. This is not a game that we are playing. There is too much at stake for us to take our sweet time. I'll get to it later. Get the help that you need. Just get open. Get real. We looked at Joseph and Moses. Just two out of the 20 plus that are listed in Hebrews chapter 11. Just two of them. They are there to show us and encourage us that God does not fail. No matter how difficult it may seem or what is going on, we have these witnesses to the faithfulness of God. Now we too can go through the difficulties of life. We too can have faith in our God and see Him come through on His promises for us individually. So throw off everything that hinders. Get rid of the sin, because our God is faithful. Look to Jesus, who went through every kind of temptation that you and I have ever faced and will ever face. Jesus, who obeyed God fully, who was mistreated by men and rejected and killed by them, who was killed on a cross. Look to Him so you will not lose heart. Faith is being sure of what you hope for and certain of what you do not see. We need to have faith like these men and women that we read about. Amen.